Don Alana Kitchen talks about food. Don Alana Kitchen talks recipes. Don Alana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on KHOI Radio. Welcome to the Don Alana Kitchen. Here we are on a nice Tuesday noon. And we're going to be talking about some spring things. And we have a wonderful special guest with us from the Story City Locker. Bobby Gustafson has come and agreed to talk with us today. I'm Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas, and we're going to have some local flavor here.
We are the Donna Lana Kitchen. First, to set our taste buds a-moving, we have a few words about a spring delicacy that we are blessed with in quantity here in Central Iowa. We're going to talk about rhubarb.
Rhubarb, one of my favorites. If we can't have lemons, which we don't have in Iowa, at least we have great rhubarb, one of the tangy experiences that we get all summer long. And we're going to talk about how you can have it all year long.
Yes, rhubarb grows quite well. It takes a few years to get established, but it grows very well here.
And is it true you don't cut the plant till the third year that it's been in the ground? Is that about right?
That's a good idea, because then that root has a chance to grow and a chance to be hardy. And the third year, it's pretty much up for some really good harvesting. Here's a tip on harvesting your rhubarb. Harvesting now, it's a really good time. Late May, early June is a great time to harvest lots of rhubarb. Rhubarb comes in two sort of colors. It comes in very red, and then there's a green stem, too. And as far as I'm concerned, those are two different varieties, but they taste the same to me. So I have both, and I use both, the red rhubarb and the green rhubarb. A tip for harvesting is that harvest it a lot in early summer, long about the middle of June. And as it gets into the hot, hot month, it'll start sending up a flower stalk. And that is a hint that it wants to rest for a while. So do not harvest.
Mine's already sending up flower stalks, Lana. What's the deal?
For now, you can actually be a little mean to them and break off the flower stalk and keep harvesting. But long about mid-June, and if you've been harvesting a lot, I would stop harvesting. So do all your harvesting.
And do you still break the flowers off at that point?
No. I let the flowers go.
Oh.
I let the flowers go.
So it doesn't zap the energy of the plant?
I don't think so, but then I have a whole bunch of rhubarb that I sort of forget about.
Lana has, like, plants lining her driveway. She has so much rhubarb.
Yeah, I sort of.
And I noticed, I'm jealous, her rhubarb is red. Mine is green. I bought the wrong flavor variety.
Look for different flavors. You can get them in different flavors. Valentine is a variety of really red rhubarb that does well here. That's one variety.
When you cook it, they seem to taste the same, but the red is so much prettier. I mean, I have found myself, if I'm making like a rhubarb compote, I will actually like put in cherry juice or cranberry juice or something just to make it red, because in my mind, rhubarb should be red.
And one should always eat with your eyes, too. Yes. another tip about harvesting, and I learned this from a friend a couple of years ago. Instead of taking a knife out to your rhubarb patch and cutting off those stalks, I reach down low on each stalk and give it a tug so the whole stalk comes out, like a big stalk of celery. That is a little easier on the plant.
So it kind of just wiggles loose?
Wiggles
like pulling
loose
out
and
a
break
loose
it
tooth
off.
Or something?
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
And do you pull from the bottom or do you go into the middle of the plant?
I go from the outside. I go from the outside in.
Okay, so kind of the lower outside stalks. All right, those are the first ones to get rid of then.
Also probably those are the biggest ones too.
So, okay. Yeah. Well, I had some little underly straggly ones down there that
I was... That's good. That's good too. You can take those off. That's good. Another tip, when you take off this big stalk, you've got a bottom butt end that sort of looks like the bottom of a piece of celery.
Mm-hmm.
Up on the top, you've got a big leaf. Those leaves are great for composting or for putting around your plants in the garden. It makes a really nice mulch. But be careful. I've read that the leaves are toxic, so I don't feed the leaves to my chickens. I compost the leaves. Another thing, if you want to store those stalks for a while, leave that butt end of the celery on and
cut off
of the rhubarb,
of the rhubarb, not the celery, of the rhubarb on, and on the very top, leave, cut off all, almost all of the leaf, but leave a little leaf on the top.
Like that, about an inch of it.
About an inch of the green on the top. And that kind of stores the, think of it as when you cut into the stem, you're letting the juice out. So you've got kind of a sealed in bottom of your rhubarb stalk, and you'll have a sealed in top. And then when you're ready to chop it up, you can get rid of those two.
Now that's if you're just keeping it for like a week in the fridge.
In the refrigerator.
Now let's talk about freezing it, because although occasionally, like I've found at the Fairway, sometimes frozen rhubarb, but not a lot of places carry frozen rhubarb. And I think it's one of the easiest things. I don't do anything except cut it up and throw it in the freezer bag. I don't blanch it. I don't do anything. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the, you know, you don't have to pit it. You don't have to do it. It's so I think it's one of the easiest things to store. And, you know, when you want a nice tart flavor in the middle of the winter, there you have it. And at that point, even if you want to make a jelly out of it, you can. But during harvest season, when everything is like a flurry, it's the easiest thing to just put up and don't forget to label it.
Don't forget to label. I have a little hint here called do not do this at home. I had a in freezer bag that was obviously some really good-looking rhubarb. And I had not labeled it at all, so heaven knows how many years it had been there. I went ahead and made what I thought was a really good rhubarb pie, and it was freezer burned, and it was a rhubarb pie that was the hardest stuff I've ever tried to put my teeth through. So when you put stuff in the freezer, do label it. Put the date on it.
Yes, the month and the day and the year.
Yes.
And I have to often, not with rhubarb, I can recognize that, but I have to remember to say what's in it, because sometimes I get these mystery bags. You know?
Yes, yes. We may think we're clever, but please label your stuff. You will be ever so happy, ever so much more happy in February. Yes.
Now, Lana's got a really good rhubarb recipe, and then I'm going to give you one, too.
All right. Time for rhubarb recipes, and these will be on the Donna Lana Kitchen website on KHOI on the KHOI website. So that's www.khoifm.org, and look for the Donna Lana Kitchen. We put things there. You'll be able to find this. This recipe is in my recipe book, and it's called Bernice's Really Good Rhubarb Dessert. And I got this from Bernice Donovan. She's no longer with us, but she was a wonderful force to be reckoned with here in Ames and a real favorite of a lot of people. She was a longtime member of St. Thomas Aquinas Church. So who knows? She maybe took this recipe to the church suppers. I don't know for sure. But she turned me on to this recipe. It's kind of a...
Wait a minute. I had it yesterday, so I have to vouch for you that it is delicious. So listen in, folks.
It's good. It sort of is a custardy sort of recipe. And here it goes. It takes two steps. It has a crust and then some good stuff on the top. Set your oven to 350. The crust is, and this is for a 9x9 pan or a small 9x10 pan. You can double the recipe if you'd want. This is for a small recipe. For the crust, 1 cup flour, 5 tablespoons powdered sugar. Powdered sugar really is nice here. 1/2 cup butter. I melt it, put it all together, stir it around till it's all crumbly, cover the bottom of a small pan that has been floured, and bake it. Buttered and floured. Then bake it for 15 minutes at 350. And while that is baking, mix together 2 eggs, stir them, and add two cups of rhubarb, 2+ cups of rhubarb. You can add apples if you like. Apples and rhubarb go good together. But 2 cups at least of rhubarb, more if you want a bit more kick. And 1/2 teaspoon vanilla. So you mix together the 2 eggs,
the rhubarb,
and the 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla. And then you stir it with 1 1/2 cups sugar, 1/4 teaspoon salt, 1/4 cup of flour, 3/4 teaspoon baking powder, and 1/4 to 1/2 cup nuts, depending on how much you have, ground nuts.
What kind of nuts?
I use walnuts.
Okay.
I stir them up a little bit.
Well, pecans sound good to me, too.
Yeah, walnuts. Yeah, well, pecans would be good, too. And then you stir that all up. You put that on top of the crust after you've taken it out of the oven after 15 minutes. Put that back in the oven. Bake it for 40 minutes or more, and it's nice and bubbly. And then you eat it.
Yum.
There you have it.
Yum, yum.
So that's Bernice's really good rhubarb dessert.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about rhubarb syrup, which is another very simple thing to make and has multiple applications. The basic recipe is, and you can, you know, enlarge this if you want, but a cup of sugar, a cup of water, that's your simple syrup, and then you boil it with 2 cups of rhubarb. Some people like their syrup sweeter. You can cut back on the rhubarb. But I like a good strong rhubarb flavor, and I don't like it cloyingly sweet. So basically all you do is 1 cup sugar, 1 cup water, 2 cups rhubarb, and you boil it, simmer it over kind of low, you know, until the rhubarb is completely, like, sloppy, you know, breaks down into
sloppy.
The strands,
sloppy.
No pieces left. Doesn't take very long. Then you strain it off. I just use a fine metal strainer. If you want to be really fussy, you could use cheesecloth. The suggestion is not to squeeze it too hard because it'll get cloudy. However, I don't like to waste any of that flavor. So I do press down a little bit on my strainer. So then you've got it. You can refrigerate it. You could make ice cubes out of it. You could make... you know, then if you wanted to make like almost like a lemonade-y kind of thing, but it's rhubarb aid, you know, you can mix up a pitcher of it with club soda or even just dilute with water. You can throw in a few lemon verbena leaves and maybe even a little lemon if you want. Or you can make cocktails with it. So just adding champagne, you'd end up with the rhubarb mimosa. Or if you want like a gin drink, you can do some gin, lemon juice, and soda water. So the variables are, you know, kind of wide ranging. But it's really simple to make, and it will keep quite a while in the refrigerator, maybe, oh, easily a month, you know, as long as it doesn't start to get that refrigerator flavor. And if you, you know, Lana and I have talked about rose geranium. If you want to throw a rose geranium leaf into the cooking rhubarb, that will also bend the flavor a little bit further. I think nutmeg is kind of the traditional flavoring that goes with rhubarb, although I think coriander seed might be nice boiled into it. Certainly vanilla, like Lana had. Ceylon cinnamon, which is the kind of floralish cinnamon, not too strong. And then, of course, I put a little black pepper in all of my fruity things. So that's it on the rhubarb front, folks. The syrup is really simple to make, and I would encourage you. Oh, you could even pour it over vanilla ice cream.
Oh, well, everything.
You know, it's good. Like everything is good on vanilla ice cream.
Good.
But it's just a nice thing. If you have it made up, sitting in the fridge, you'll think of all kinds of things to make with it.
Good. So let's celebrate rhubarb.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome back. This is Lana Donna Kitchen on KHOI Radio. Lana, Donna and I are having fun doing this. This is a community radio station. You can tell it's a community radio station because Donna and I are on the radio. We're not radio professionals. We just like to talk.
And we like to talk about the people we know and the things that are going on around us and what we're eating every day and what we want to eat tomorrow and what we ate yesterday.
it's an ever occurring topic. Donna and I took a road trip last week, and we ended up at a real fine place called the Story City Locker and met owners Ty and Bobby Gustafson. And Bobby Gustafson has agreed to come into the studio today, and we're going to talk about their new business and all the kind of stuff that they have to eat there. Owners Ty and Bobby Gustafson are committed to providing quality service and product to their customers in Central Iowa. They believe that sustainable farming practices and local food supply systems improve the quality of life in a big way. The Gustafsons are happy to operate a business that prioritizes sustainable concepts. They have the Story City Locker.
Oh, boy. So I'm going to just talk a little bit about lockers and how they affect communities and kind of get a historical perspective so that you will appreciate, as Lana and I do, what an opportunity it is to have our own locker here. You know, I'm going to go back to my childhood in Western Illinois, and the locker was an integral part of farm life. I would remember my aunt, who was the main remaining farmer in the family, was always stopping by the locker, and she'd have us kids in the car, and she'd go in, and she'd come back out, and there'd be all these white packages of frozen meat. And, you know, so for me, it represented bounty. Now, they were dairy farmers, but, you know, they butchered for their own, you know, to feed themselves, too. So Aunt Helen was always stopping. Oh, we're going into town. Got to stop by the locker. And so the locker functioned as, you know, a way to I mean, you could kill your own pigs and chickens. In fact, Aunt Helen did kill her own chickens, and I was an early witness to that. And I think that those are formative experiences that a lot of children are lacking these days. But the bigger animals, killing a cow, they're quite heavy. It's quite an ordeal. So most farmers, it's been a long time since farmers butchered something that large at home. And certainly in the 50s when I was growing up, in the 60s and 70s and on into the 80s, pretty much all rural areas had – it was like you had the bank, you had the locker, and the gasoline station.
And the bar,
of course. And now we're down to most small towns only have – probably the bar and the gasoline station. But the problem is that as we lost the lockers, farmers lost their ability to process, you know, small numbers, even from, you know, 10, 15, 20, and they weren't able to be diversified. And unless you were raising cattle or pigs for mass market and into the conventional meat systems, you couldn't grow a few cows or a few pigs because there was no way to dispatch them, so to speak. And there was also no way, even if you were just doing it for yourself, it was problematic. But even worse is if you can't sell it unless you have a licensed abattoir with a kill floor. You know, it's highly regulated because, of course, meat is it's pretty easy to get contamination. It's alive, and then it's still living with other things, you know. So as we lost those more and more, it became a real problem for farmers and for eaters as well. So I think we're having a resurgence, fortunately, of these abilities, and the Gustafsons have jumped right in here in our own community, and we are really, really lucky to have them.
So welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Bobby, and tell us a little bit how you got started.
Well, thank you.
Why did you do this?
Why? Well, first I want to say thank you for having me here this morning to talk about us and what we're doing. And Actually, the whole locker environment is not unfamiliar to Ty and I and our family. Ty is a hunter and and is very close friends with owner-operators of another locker in the state, and they actually hunt together and own some hunting land together.
This is the Atlantic Locker,
yes. Mm-hmm. And so as Ty's grown and over the years, he's spent quite a bit of time in that locker with the Hoppert family. And as he aged and
he's not that aged. They're still fairly young.
Yeah. We're in our 40s. He found himself niched in information technology as a career, and he's a farm boy. And as his career developed in information technology, he became more and more removed from the lifestyle that he's comfortable with. And initially, Dale and Shirley, they have three sons, and they're getting towards an age where they would like to retire. And Ty is basically a son to them. They're very, very close. And the three other boys of, Dale's three boys, had found themselves in other endeavors and really didn't have an interest to succeed and take over the locker. And so you can basically say...
Right. We have aging butchers the way we have aging farmers, and passing on those businesses is succession is difficult.
And it is. That is what has led to the decline of locker facilities in the state, is the demographic of the age group that is owning and operating them.
It's vigorous work, to say the least.
It is. It's rewarding work, though. And I have to say we're very happy with the lifestyle changes that we've made. And, yes, it is vigorous work, but it's very rewarding, and we're very happy that we've done this.
When did you open the locker, and where is it located?
It's in Story City, right on Broad Street, on the west side of Story City. And we became operational in October of this past year. We started custom processing then, and then in December we had our regulatory assistance in place from the state so that we could start harvesting officially. And so mid-December we rolled out our retail space and our state-inspected processing services.
I think we need to remind listeners that getting in this business is not – it's a complicated business. It's expensive to build the facilities out, so it's a large investment. You know, it's not like, oh, I want to set up a beauty parlor. And then the regulations state-wise, and even if you go for federal, is even more complicated. And it's a heavy skill set to take on.
It is. When we designed the – we worked with the engineer to design the facility. The facility, regulatory standard-wise – could be, it meets all federal regulations
as
well.
It's very cool. You guys got to go see it.
The state has been so supportive from the very beginning, and they've been great partners and very resourceful. So we're happy. And our business focus, too, we really wanted to focus more locally. And so it made sense. And since the state was partnering with us so well, it just made sense for us to partner with the state for inspection services rather than...
All that means is that the meat that is processed there cannot be sold across state lines.
That's right. Yep. Anybody that wants to process to be able to ship out of the state for retail sale, they need to process at a federal plant. Mm-hmm. But being right here in the central part of Iowa and wanting to have a local focus and support local food supply, it made sense to...
To stay
with state. And what we really hope, everyone told us as we were building the business that our facility is too small. And we know our facility is small, but we
How many square feet is it?
Oh, gosh. Well, the best way for me to describe the size of the facility is that we can harvest 10 beef a week. I mean, we can harvest 20 beef a week.
Uh-huh.
Our coolers and our freezer spaces have enough space to adjust to 20 beef a week.
That doesn't seem small to me, but it seems like just perfect.
Well, it feels big to Ty and I. So what really, as people in the industry have said this to us, our response has developed to be that Because we're very committed to supporting local food supply, and we encourage others to do that as well, if we can roll out a business that is manageable for us as a family and to be sustainable for our family and for the employees that work for us, if we
and
can
you
do
have
that.
How many employees?
We have eight other employees.
Plus yourselves.
Plus ourselves. Yeah. There's 10 of us in all.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
If we can do it and inspire and show others that you can do this, then we've done a good job.
At this scale.
Yep.
Yeah.
We don't have aspirations to serve outside of our local area. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We want to provide the service to our local area. And we want to be a model that it is possible. And in other parts of the state, if we can inspire someone to roll out a similar model and have some confidence that it's practical and doable, then we've done a good job. That's what we want to
do. So you basically are two sides of the business. One is the retail, mm-hmm. and then the other is just the slaughter and packaging.
Yep.
Or harvesting, as you call it.
Well, it's custom work for other for people, uh-huh. for restaurants, for private
Right. Yep. The custom work and our business – it really is dependent on custom processing. We really view our retail space as a hospitality center to give exposure to the local sustainable
farmers. And they are very
farmers.
Hospitable there.
Oh, thank you. And it gives people an opportunity to try some of the local meat that's available to them as well.
Well, you've also hired a chef. That's no small deal. And you're processing some value-added things you want to talk about. Okay, Lana and I went to the retail space, and I'm going to start by raving about the things. We each picked a few little goodies and took them home, and I bought some sausage because you make a lot of sausages.
We do.
So we tried the French country sausage, which was just great. And I also bought, is it Braunschweiger or liverwurst?
Braunschweiger.
The Braunschweiger was the best I've ever had.
Oh, thank you.
I have to say, you know, sometimes especially with pork liver, you can get this sort of metallic-y, acrid flavor, and this was sweet. It was yummy. I highly recommend it. I could easily say it might be the best I've ever eaten.
Thank you.
And coming from a German family, I've eaten a lot of it. and also, and fish. I bought a fish, which I haven't eaten yet.
Yep.
So they process fish.
We do.
Fish, chickens, beef, pork.
Lamb and goat.
Lamb and goat.
Yes. And the variety in the meat lock, in the meat counters and meat cases up front. Frozen and fresh is quite amazing. There were three kinds of bacon that I looked at, and I got some summer sausage. I got bacon, and I will be back because all that stuff looks so good. And there also is, like I said, coming into Story City from the west on
you can't
Broad
miss
Street.
It. It's really
it's
easy
a, it's
to
a
find.
Red, it's a wonderful red building off to the south of Broad Street.
Uh-huh.
And
we took 69 up.
We took 69 up, turned right. There you had it. There it was. Walk in, and you immediately get hungry. It's just a really, really nice place.
Oh, it's that smoker. It smells good.
Yeah,
anybody that has a smoker.
Yeah.
And to have a full-time chef to actually be doing, and we saw the smoke room or the smoker. We saw the kitchens where different things are prepared. There's things hanging up. There's meat being processed. There's a huge cooler. I guess I don't get out much. I've never seen so much hanging beef all in one place before.
It's pretty spectacular.
Pretty lovely.
You look in the chill freezer, which is I'm going to guess it's a room that's 15 by 15 maybe.
Yeah.
And it's tall because they've got the full, either full or half carcasses of beef hanging. And it's like a forest of beef. It's so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
It's so beautiful. And I also, another thing I noticed that on the door of the kill floor, it says, knock before entering. And Ty said, he very carefully asked it, you know, because it's a sensitive area.
It is.
If you have not seen meat killed before, you need to know that what you're eating used to be a live animal. Mm-hmm. And like Paul Willis of Nyman Ranch, he'll say, my pigs only have one bad day in their life. You know, and it is something that, you know, we all have to make peace with ethically that, you know, but, you know, if you're picking flowers and vegetables, they were once alive too. So
I think it's so healthy. I think
I do too.
It's healthy to know where your food comes from. And it's been really interesting, the families that harvest for themselves and the small children that are in those families and those families without the small children as well. But when they come in and they bring their harvest in, it's interesting to me because
the harvest is the live animal.
Is the live animal. Uh-huh. Yes, it is. For them, I know just by the relationship that they have with the harvest that they're not going to waste one little bit of that, mm-hmm. that it has a higher value in their freezer than other things that they have not had a relationship or a connection with mm-hmm. in their freezer. And food waste is an environmental issue. It's a legitimate issue.
I find it an ethical issue, too.
Yes, yep.
Yes, yes. Yep.
But
waste not, want not.
And it also appreciate that we're part of this web of life. Life mm-hmm. eats life.
Interdependence, you know, of us with our food, basically.
And it's interesting working in that environment, too, becoming aware of that point where an animal conceptually becomes meat to you and it's no longer that animal. And everybody that works there in that environment experiences that, has experienced it mm-hmm. since working there, and it's different for everyone psychologically how they adjust to and accept and realize that the meat protein had a face, and it was, mm-hmm. and we just had somebody pick up a harvest, and the beef that they brought in, her name was Molly, and when they picked up their harvest, they identified it as this was Molly's gift to their family. Mm-hmm. It was no longer Molly. It was mm-hmm. meat. It wasn't mm-hmm. an animal. It was meat. And there is that point with everyone that works there that it was an animal, and then it isn't an animal. It's meat then at that point. They're two separate things.
I have a theory that maybe you can either agree or disagree, but I think the younger age that one is when one is exposed to that, like I can remember my aunt chopping off the chicken heads and watching the whole thing flop around. And I was probably 6 or 7. And then my uncle's doing, you know, full out hog butchering where they've got them all hung up. It's impressive as a child. And I think because I was exposed to it early, it isn't so disquieting to me.
There are things that children figure out that it seems pretty traumatic, but when you figure it out, that's how it works. It's like, yeah, anything else you figure out when you're a kid. There's some surprising things you have to learn, and you do. You do.
It's good to know where your food comes from.
Yes, yes.
And I know it's not always appealing to know where your food came from, but it definitely is healthy to mm-hmm. know where your food comes from. It helps with your consumption. It helps with respecting the food supply and not wasting it. Mm-hmm. There's just nothing negative about it, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One thing I noticed also in your display, in your front area, the retail part of your store, you had meat shares. Talk a little bit about meat shares and your CSA, Community Supported Agriculture.
Yes. Well, like I said, our business is really dependent on custom processing and making those connections with the local buyer to the local farmer. And not long after we opened, Farm to Folk actually approached us.
Which is in Ames. It's sort of a collective buying from farmers and selling to members. But anybody can be a member. You can look them up on the web, Farm to Folk. Just Google that.
And because in our retail space, we have a commitment for everything to be traceable and traceable back to the farm that it was sourced from.
Very important.
All of our packaging has QR codes on it that with an electronic device, when you scan the QR code, it'll give you information about the farm and where the meat was sourced from. And because of that, Farm to Folk perceived that the majority of the shares that they help coordinate the marketing of, I guess, is one way to say it, is veggie shares.
Mm-hmm. Vegetables, eggs. There's mm-hmm. been some chickens, But no. Oh, and some meat from there the quarries.
There is some meat. There's meat from Corey Family Farm, and then there's some beef suppliers that occasionally provide beef as well. But they approached us to see if we would have any interest in providing shares, meat shares, through. And so conceptually, we worked out some bundling and that some bundling opportunities and
so you
a
get
10
sort of
week
a different thing every week.
Yep, for 10 weeks. And basically what it does is it encourages the custom processing. It's a larger purchase basically. But not everyone has a large chest freezer or has space for a large chest freezer or has the desire to store a large amount of meat and can consume a large amount of meat in a reasonable amount of time. And bundling and sharing allows us as a business.
So is it frozen or fresh?
It is frozen.
Okay.
And it allows us to utilize harvest pricing instead of a supply and demand pricing model. And so it's by weight. The bundles and the shares are priced by weight. Meat, regulatory-wise, has to be sold by weight. And so someone can invest in a CSA share, which is a 10-week half-bundle pickup. You don't need to have a large freezer then to be able to invest in local meats with a harvest price. Supply and demand pricing models, it takes the farmer a longer amount of time to raise the harvest, and it also, there's more inputs into it, different kinds of inputs.
But now you have grass-fed bundles?
We do.
And what else?
We have corn-finished beef bundles. All of these products are animals raised in fresh air outside of industrial production. And so
locally,
yes. And so we have beef shares, we have beef pork combination shares, we have pork shares, and we have 100% grass finished beef shares as well.
And you can also pick this up at your retail space, right?
We do. In our freezer, we have some convenience items that people can grab, like bacon and breakfast sausage and ground beef and ground pork and some of the ground sausages, some of the common meats that people really look for the most when they come in. And whatever we're featuring in our fresh case for single cuts, those are always available.
I saw some beautiful steaks the other day.
Yes, yep.
Ooh, thick. Ooh, ooh.
Yeah. We can't keep enough ribeyes in there. But primarily in the freezer space, we do have the bundle opportunities with the harvest pricing. Anything in the fresh case is a retail it's a supply and demand model that's pricing that meat.
Now you're also doing sandwiches and catering is available.
You mentioned our chef and Ty and I feel so fortunate to have Brian there.
Brian's name? Brian what?
Brian Malone.
Uh-huh.
And him and his wife and they have just recently had their first baby. They live here in the Ames area. And Brian's not a stranger to the restaurant industry here in the Ames area.
Who did you say he came from? Aunt Maud's?
He was at Aunt Maud's for the past several years. But he approached us. He saw what we were doing as we were rolling out the business. He's been all over the country crafting doing his thing. And
right, so he made the Braunschweiger, right?
He did, yes.
And, I forgot to mention the pastrami. I bought some pastrami, too.
Yes.
Oh, yum. I was eating it with the agricultured sauerkraut that I bought at the market.
I want to break in here. It's a little message from our station that we're listening to KHOI Community Radio.
Welcome back to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're here with Bobby Gustafson from the Story City Locker. We've got more good things to talk about.
So we were talking about Bobby's sandwiches and the catering that they're doing because they have a chef on staff there. And so I'm going to just read you the sandwich list. So it does say 48 hours notice is required for these lunch boxes. But, I mean, I assume this is if people want to pick them up, like, for a meeting or something. So they have the backyard pork, which is brined and smoked pork loin shaved with tomato, basil, jam, red onions, and fresh greens. Then they have the pit-smoked pastrami, which is cured beef shaved with Russian sauce, white cheddar cheese, red onion, and tomato, and fresh greens. Then they have the old-timer beef, which is aged dried beef shaved. Not easy to find. I'm looking forward to that. With horseradish cream, cheddar cheese, red onion, tomato, and fresh sprouts. And then they have the Albert special. Now, I don't know who Albert is, but...
Yeah, that's a story.
Okay. Let me read you what it is, and then you're going to have to tell us the story. The Albert special is coarse grind bologna, shaved, ham... What is that word?
Gardiniere. Oh.
So it's aioli with kind of pickled vegetables chopped into it, right?
Yep.
Okay. Mozzarella cheese, red onion, tomato, and fresh greens. Okay, so who is Albert?
Okay, Albert Dunhow was a grocer in the Story City area once upon a time.
Oh.
And he crafted this ring bologna.
Oh!
And as we were building, Mayor Mike Jensen actually approached us and said, I have Albert's recipe. Would you guys be interested in crafting it? And so...
Now, we are talking real local flavor.
It is,
fantastic.
Yes, it is. And it's a treat to have his recipe. And it's identified with his name on the label. And our very first sandwich that Brian rolled out for our... Not only... We do the catering, and that's our catering menu, but we do a sandwich of the week. So we do this box lunch with a sandwich of the week. And
okay, so what's the sandwich this week?
It's a pork sandwich with it's an Asian flair. It's got an Asian flair.
Ah.
There's a wasabi sauce on it and some...
I think we're going out for lunch after this, girls.
Cilantro. It's delicious.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But, and last week there was something that had a fennel summer sausage in it or something.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Fennel summer sausage and ham.
This is what happens when you have a chef on the staff.
Yes. And it's wonderful because we're using all these local vegetables and we're crafting with local meats. And I'm so proud of the local sourcing that we're doing and how our chef is using it to craft just delicious things.
Well,
for the local
let me
area.
Ask you how being in the food business has affected your family life and what you cook for dinner and that sort of thing. How your girls eat.
Well, yeah, Ty and I have two daughters. One is 19 and she's not living with us, and she's out independent. And then we have a sophomore. She'll be 16 in June, and. And our eating habits have changed, and cooking for ourselves and eating well is more important than ever to us. And
of course, you have your own chef now, so.
But the act of I actually enjoy it, and Ty enjoys cooking as well. We do enjoy cooking for ourselves, and there's something really nurturing about that. And we want to encourage. We can't use local food supply if we're not willing to prepare it for ourselves,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
We have growing farmers markets and growing varieties of local fruits and vegetables available to us. And so we as a business really, and it, just as people, see great value in a return to preparing meals for yourselves. There's something really lovely about it.
Right. You used the term growing, and you think about selling something at a farmer's market. Okay, you're selling a tomato. There's back timing. You have to prepare. Okay, you want to sell the tomato, but there's all the preparing ahead of time. And this works in the meat processing business, too. You just, although we're very used to going to the grocery store and getting whatever we want, whenever, this slows us down a little bit and backs us up into, oh, yes, there's a farmer. There's a field. There's the animal. who has another animal, and there's time growing.
Yeah, and it's a couple of years for
a cow. Yeah, the backing up of time and be willing, not only be willing to wait, but Ty and Bobby are getting good at meeting many, many more producers, kind of staggering all of that, encouraging producers to bring this stuff in, and they make it ever so much more edible for us.
Bobby, do you want to give us a quick list of some of the farmers that are bringing meat to you? I know you've got them on your website.
Well, and that's the problem, too. It's very challenging to provide that comprehensive list to people because even trying to build it into – there's some very established sustainable farms that have been very successful at self-marketing. Mm-hmm. But then there's farms that they don't have the desire nor the interest to market. They want to farm, and they want to spend their time farming. And for many of – if they're not doing that full time, many of the local sustainable growers, it's a second job for them too, and they don't have the time to market for themselves either. So they don't have the branding, they don't have the farm name. They're Joe Smith, and so it's hard to provide a comprehensive list, but. We appreciate and enjoy all of the relationship building we're doing with all types of farmers that we're engaged with right now. Some of the pork is very difficult to source locally, sustainably raised pork. And so we're very, very
happy.
Isn't
that shocking in the middle of Iowa?
Yeah. For pork, one of the most beneficial relationships we have right now is with Crooked Gap Farm in Knoxville. Mm-hmm. And so for pork, they're a big source. But there's a good 5-6 since we've rolled out the retail space in December, 5-6 other farmers that they're not as branded and marketing themselves the same way.
The hope is, of course, in a community, now that we have the locker capacity, more farmers will I think I'll put in 20 or 30 pigs or because they can do it. They couldn't do it before.
Right. Yep. And eventually we want on our website to be able to have that list of farmers. And we've got a start of that list, but we've been operational for about 7 months now. And so we're still relationship building and mm-hmm. finding out who has the supply that we can partner up with well. And
good. So tell us your website.
The website address is www.storycitylocker.com. And
that's it.
Yep.
We're looking forward to hearing much more about this wonderful growing market and wonderful growing food stuff in the future. And there's all kinds of people that are connected up with you that'll make a really interesting thing to keep track of. For instance, PFI, Practical Farmers of Iowa, just put out their field day guide. Field days are wonderful.
For this year, this summer.
And along about late in September, September 21st, the Story City Locker is involved in a field day, September 21st, called Make and Bacon, Pork Processing, Curing and Tasting. And that is working with?
La Quercia.
And?
France and Family Farm.
Right. And with the Story City Locker. And it'll be a wonderful thing, wonderful way to observe pork processing at the Story City Locker and sampling and having all kinds of wonderful stuff going on there.
Don't wait till September to get up there. There's all kinds of summer barbecuing opportunities. I was going to give a quick beef recipe that I like for summer a lot, using a filet mignon cut. This is one that I used to use for all my celebrities who were trying to be thin and gorgeous. So we used a filet mignon cut because it's not terribly marbled and you could easily get most of the fat off because that was a concern for them. However, of course, if it's grass-fed, I like to keep the fat because that's so good for you. But basically, I take the steak and cut them about 3/4 inch thick, and I marinate them in tamari, which is soy sauce, but the tamari is usually a little more authentic, but you can use soy sauce if that's what you find at the store, and seasoned rice wine vinegar. So you just make a mixture about equal parts of those, and you put the steaks in them. You leave it in that for at least an hour in the fridge. Longer, you can leave them overnight. then you take them out and you either pan fry them quickly or you can grill them. And then you serve a little of the marinade over them with some chopped scallions. And it's really simple, really fast, and very delicious.
Sounds delicious.
Okay, great. I want to thank Bobby Gustafson for being part of our great show today. And I wanted to just kind of let you know about some upcoming things. There are more PFI field days, and we'll be talking about those in the time to come. Also, the Donalana Kitchen, we've been actually planning this. I mean, we actually write this stuff down. Here are some of the upcoming topics we're going to be dealing with. Donna has agreed. Now, this is the hardship detail. She's going to do a gelato report.
Or just ice cream, all kinds of ice creams.
And
frozen summer desserts. How about that?
That'll be a great thing to report on. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about birds outside our kitchen window because there's a lot of people are interested in birding.
Not eating birds, but what we can feed the birds.
Yes, yeah. the little flitty
feeding
around
the birds,
kind.
Yes.
And edible flowers. And the greens and lettuce that we can have to put those edible flowers on. And ideas for salad dressings to put.
I think next week we'll probably do salad dressing.
Salad dressing sounds good next week.
Some point we should get into potato salads, too. There was a story at dinner last night that someone in Iowa in the past 20 years or so had a potluck, you know, not uncoordinated, just show up and bring something, and every single person brought potato salad. And I thought, now that is an Iowa story. There were probably 20 varieties of potato salad.
That's the potluck of legend. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. The potluck potato salad. A coffee. We'll talk about coffee. And Donna's making,
cold brewed coffee. I'm now a big fan. We'll talk about that.
That's good.
And we can talk about coffee and ice cream.
Well, I see. Huh? There we go.
That's called an affogato. Wait till I tell you about that one.
Oh, that'll be good. So tune into the Donalana Kitchen. We're here Tuesdays at noon and also repeat at 7 p.m. at night. So thanks again to our special guest, Bobby Gustafson from the Story City Locker. You have been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. I'm Lana Noctigal.
And Donna Prisgintas.
With excellent engineering by Rick Morrison. You've been listening today to Music by Wild Asparagus. And we'll go out with a nice waltz by Wild Asparagus. So from the Donalana Kitchen, eat good food and enjoy life.
And be sure to get some of your wild asparagus eaten these days while we have it.